Linda is going to provide us with a Florida summary, and then we'll open the floor to questions from Megan, Linda, or other members of the panel.
Just to give a quick background of who I am, Linda Harris, and I work for Fish and Wildlife, and I work in our division of law enforcement, so if you can't reach out, I'm not I deal primarily with our captive wildlife regulations, so what I'm going to do today is just kind of give a quick overview of licensing, permitting, importation, identification requirements, record-keeping requirements, licensing and transport. So basically, Florida has some pretty extensive regulations dealing with captive wildlife. Most of our regulations are found in Chapter 379 of the Florida statute, as well as in our Florida Administrative Code, 68.5, 68A-6, 68A-9, and 68A-12. So why is it important to understand the licensing requirements? Some of you may travel to Florida. In Florida, it's unlawful to buy, sell, or transfer wildlife to or from any unpermitted entity. If you come into Florida and you're going to be selling wildlife, you are required to have a license. There's different types of licenses based on what is your activity. Are you exhibiting? Are you selling? Is it venomous reptiles? Is it... I have reptiles of concern up there, but basically our list is there is no reptiles of concern. There are now additional species. Also, an import permit may be required.
Do you have separate in-state versus out-of-state licensing, or is it?
No, it's all one license, one fee.
You all actually like paying attention to the Constitution.
In Texas, we have our own constitution.
I know.
We have several.
In Florida,
we rely on the legislature.
Colleges charge it to the administration, too, like universities.
Different. That's a different issue, though, because they're serving the colleges or subsidized education. But Megan pointed this out herself. If the agency can establish a basis for it, why it's more expensive to provide out-of-state permits, they could sustain it. If they can't, then it's probably a burden on them.
Is it a different price constitutionally than
tax? You can characterize it in different ways, but the bottom line is the Interstate Commerce Clause says that states can't burden interstate commerce by imposing restrictions on people out of state that aren't rationally related to something. So,
I know a good many of these states, I'm not speaking about specifically herp-related things, but the Game and Fish Commission's a good number of states have out-of-state for hunting and fishing, their out-of-state licenses are a lot more than what they are.
Yeah, I know. No, a lot of states do have it. I apologize, Linda. So let's let Linda finish her presentation and then get into the discussion. I agree with you. A lot of states do have it.
And we Florida does as well with regards to hunting, fishing, and some other of our license types. But with regards to sale of reptiles specifically, it's just one price. So basically, how do you determine what kind of license or permit you're going to need? What is your activity? Are you just possessing it? Are you exhibiting or selling? Are you importing? And also, what category of wildlife is it? So basically, we regulate wildlife in Florida under the Class 1, 2, 3 concept, 1 being your large dangerous wildlife, the sea and zoos, elephants, rhinos. Your crocodiles fall into this category. Cannot be possessed for personal use, only for commercial purposes. Class 2, they can be kind of a step down from Class 1. They can be possessed for personal use. Your American alligator, Chinese alligator, your penguins, and your dwarf crocodile fall on this list. Class 3 is everything else that's not listed, and when I say not listed as Class 1 or 2, nor is it listed as one of our conditional or prohibited species, or then reptile concern, venomous reptile. Again, this PowerPoint is a little bit dated. We, in 2010, our list of reptiles of concern that were regulated in Florida moved to our conditional species list, and I'll go through what those are in just a few minutes. So, again, your crocodiles, gavials, black caimans, Komodo dragons, those are your class 1 animals, again, only for commercial purposes. Your alligators, caiman, or crocodiles, they can be possessed for personal use, in other words, personal pet, or for commercial purposes. So this is a statute that requires a license. Again, if you're doing business in Florida, you are required to have a license. If you're offering for sale, you put an ad out and advertise now, you are required to have a license as well. And it specifically addresses birds, mammals, amphibians, and reptiles, whether they're native or non-native. This is one thing that that was also included in the statutes, that if you're out of state and you're dealing with Florida, you're selling into the state of Florida, even if you're out of state, if it's a conditional or prohibited species, if it's a venomous reptile, you are required to have a Florida license. So just to give you an idea of how many licenses that we issue, these are examples of our exhibition and sale license. 2011, we issued 446 of our exhibition and sale licenses for Class 1 or Class 2. 255 of these did have some sort of reptile authorization on it. Now, just a breakdown between an ESA and an ESB. Deals with the number of animals. If you have up to 25 class 1 and or class 2 listed animals, you're going to be under that ESA license. The cost of that license is $150 a year. If you have 26 or more of a class 1 and or class 2 listed species, it's an ESB license, and the cost of that license is $250 a year. And the ESC is what probably the vast majority in here would be covered under. This is a license that, again, if it's not listed as Class 1, it's not listed as Class 2, it's not otherwise regulated or protected, it's going to fall under Class 3. So this is all your native, non-native, non-venomous reptiles and amphibians. So last year, we issued over 2,700 of those permits. 1,600 of those had authorizations for reptiles, and 155 of those were authorized for venomous. So venomous reptiles, it does include, the definition does include if it's venomoid, if it's been surgically altered and considered venomoid, it is covered under our definition of what a venomous reptile is. Excuse me. This is the regulation that deals with the captor keeping possession of venomous reptiles in Florida. The venomous reptiles license, it does also cover exhibition of venomous reptiles, but if you're exhibiting, you are required to be bonded. When we had changes in regulations where our previous reptile of concern species went to conditional species, there basically was a grandfather clause. In other words, those that possessed those specimens that were listed, they were allowed to keep and maintain those for personal use. Couldn't sell them, couldn't breed them. That's about all they can do with it. If they get ready to place the animal, it has to go to a conditionally species permitted individual. So again, no sale, trade, bartering, or breeding for personal use of conditional or prohibited species. The venomous reptile licenses, last year we issued 424 of those. 204 of those were strictly venomous reptiles. 77 had venomous reptile and rock component. Again, these were the individuals who possessed for personal use, and then 143 were just straight reptile of concern. Those were the personal use possessors. So, reptile concern to different species. Again, this is the date that I talked about. If it was a reptile of concern, it was possessed in Florida prior to July 1 of 2010, it could be possessed and maintained as long as you keep that species active and current. After that date, it all went to additional species. So what are they? Again, we've got the radio colliders listed as additional species. This does include the aberrant color patterns, including the albinos and almelodistic species. We've got the Burmese or Indian pythons, the reticulated pythons, the African rock pythons, both northern and southern. Amethystine or scrub python, and the green anaconda. Also for the lizard, the Nile monitor is listed as well. So this is an example of our conditional species permit. Again, to possess one of those specimens that I just went through the list, there are several others that are listed, but these are the reptiles. Thank you. These are the reptiles that are listed on our conditional species list. And currently, we don't have any that are listed on the prohibited list. So in 2011, you can see we issued 257 of those permits. The regulations dealing with conditional or prohibited species, they're found in Rule 685.001. 001, 002, and I think 003, I'm not sure the numbers there, but this permit, this rule here, talks about the permit that is required to import non-native specimens into Florida. So if you have a species that's not native to the state, you can contact our office and send in an import permit for those non-native species. Our office and Division of Law Enforcement would deal with that, the issuance of that permit. If you're talking about any type of conditional or prohibited species, you would deal with our exotic species coordination section. And then, again, this list, it covers anything non-native, freshwater fish, the aquatic invertebrates, marine plants, marine animals, and wild animal life. There's also some special import requirements with regards to importing certain tortoises. These are the leopard tortoises, the African spur tortoise, the Bell's hinchback tortoise. This dates back to concerns about importing ticks, mainly on reptile species, and concerns with regards to chronic wasting, heart water disease in Florida. Our Division of Habitat and Species Conservation, this is the division that has our exotic species coordination section. This is who you would acquire these permits through. And basically, there's requirements on the permit as far as once the animals come in, destroying the boxes that they were shipped in, notifying the state prior to import, and things of that nature. Excuse me, I've been battling a bad sinus infection. Okay, so again, they have to be inspected. These tortoises have to be inspected by a veterinarian and certified as free of external parasites. That written notice has to be submitted to our agency within 10 days prior to arrival. The cages have to be disinfected prior to importation and then incinerated once they arrived in Florida. I'm just going to touch on this. There are similarities in the the identification requirements for conditional species, but for venomous reptiles, basically they either have to be pit tagged or they have to be ID'd by photographic identification, and photographs specific that identify, if one of our investigators were to come in and take a look, identifying that snake with that picture. You know, what are their distinguishing marks, characteristics, scale patterns, coloration, things of that nature. With the conditional species, they do have to be pit tagged. And this basically just talks about the placement of where the tag has to be. In the back portion of the snake board of the anal plate, and then in the monitor lizard, and the body cavity close to and toward of the rear leg, or in the rear leg. It doesn't apply to any specimens that were implanted prior to acquisition of the animal. Also, any that were implanted prior to the effective date of the rule. Record keeping. Basically, if a permit is required for personal use, you're required to maintain records. If wildlife is possessed for exhibition or sale, you're required to maintain records. What type of records? When you're dealing with class 1 and class 2, and again, this is where your crocodilian species are coming into play. You have to maintain source of acquisition as well as records of sales or transfer. Back up a minute. I know the question has come up, what kind of information has to be maintained? And basically, when you're talking about acquisition, you're talking about the name, complete address, permit number if applicable, of the supplier, where it's coming from, date of acquisition, numbers, and species. When you're talking about sale and exhibition, it's basically the same information. You're providing the recipients with that same information from your business. Wildlife that's, again, possessed for personal use and a permit is required, your source of acquisition, you're required to maintain this for as long as you have the animal. And it needs to be made available for inspection upon request. It's not required for, we talked about that group of class 3, where a lot of the reptiles fall into that you see in the tray. So it's not required for the non-venomous, not otherwise protected reptiles or amphibians. And again, this is your source of acquisition record. What is required, and as a dealer, you're required to show source of acquisition. So this is kind of a little bit of a catch-22. If you're buying something as a hobbyist, I'm going to possess it, I want to later on down the road start breeding, selling, hang on to the receipts. It's a good idea just to hang on to the receipts so you'll have that information. As a seller, again, you're required to maintain those records of sales or transfer. And again, that's your information as the supplier, the date of the sale or transfer, and the numbers and species and what is being sold. As a dealer, those records, you're required to maintain those for 3 years. And again, those are to be open for inspection. So we've gone through this. Again, this is just a recap of the information that's required to be in your records of acquisition. And again, a recap of the record keeping requirements for records of sales or transfers.
So I would require, if I have people who want to sell me, they have to have a license as well. How does state can bring their own contingent and have a star resident.
Well, again, that's where you kind of get into that. If they're selling, exhibiting in Florida, you've got to have that acquisition, source of acquisition. So where are those animals coming from? You're coming into the state, you're going to have a bunch of restaurants on the table. You know, when these captive bred, if you acquire them from somewhere, you have those from. You know, you want to copy those on the zip drive as long as it's readily identifiable. That's good. There's not a distinction in the regulation. In other words, how the regulations read, if you're selling in Florida, you're required to have acquisition of where those animals came from. You may not have to have it back in Oklahoma, but when you come into Florida, you are required to have those records of acquisition. For venomous reptiles, very, very similar. Again, records of births and deaths, source of acquisition, and sales of transfer. These are the type of records you're required to maintain, and they must also be available for inspection. There's some reporting requirements when you're dealing with venomous reptiles. As a personal possessor, you're not selling, you're not exhibiting, you're not in that commercial realm. Anytime you have a change in inventory, you send us a record of that change, what you acquired. If you're an exhibitor or a dealer, it's every 6 months. Again, very similar with the conditional species. Records of births and deaths, your source of acquisition, including any PIT tag information, the number. Sales or transfers are to life permitted entities only. In other words, they have to have that conditional species permit as well. And that sale or transfer is accompanied by, and this is the same form that we use as well, for venomous reptiles, that captive wildlife inventory. So reporting for conditional species, it's every 6 months. Labeling, this is another one that comes up quite frequently coming into state. For doing commerce into or out of Florida. Any shipments that contain live wildlife that was moved in interstate or intrastate commerce has to be conspicuously labeled, name and address of the sender and receiver, and what's in that package, common scientific name and numbers of each species. If you transport venomous reptiles, there are some specific requirements with regards to how they have to be transported. In a secured container, it needs to be locked, it needs to be labeled, saying danger to these reptiles, air holes to be screened, and contained within a container. In other words, either bag, or if they're in like a little flat box, that box is closed, then put into the transport box, and that box is locked and labeled. For your conditional species, there is a double bagging requirement, and again, secure container concept as well, in a locked container, and it's labeled dangerous reptiles. So, that's just kind of, I ran through it pretty quickly. These are the two best websites that you can go to. This is for our statutes as well as our administrative code. That's going to be what's current. That's where you're going to get the current information.
There was a question yesterday by somebody about the labeling requirements and a potential for UPS or FedEx driver to drop something off your truck. Does your labeling requirement allow CE invoice, or do you have to list?
What it says is it has to be conspicuously labeled, so it does not you know, if you have a packing invoice that's right there where we can look at it, open it up, take a look at it, you can use that. It's got to be on the package.
So is that from Florida to Florida, or are they coming into Florida, and they're out of Florida, or is it
inter or interstate commerce?
And you're saying, I missed the part, you're saying that it says see invoice?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times you'll have a packing slip that's readily available that has that inventory information. You can pull it and look at it. That's fine. If not, it's if your invoice is in the box, you've got to have it outside of the box.
Does it leave the state moving out of the state?
There's my contact information. My counterpart is Jason Marlowe in our office. If you have any questions, we can help you out in any way. Give us a call. We'll be glad to work with you.
Thank you, Linda.